Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, surprise, surprise. Jimmy and Cousin Sal join us for the first half of the show for a little birthday walk down memory lane. Funny, sweet, touching, and poignant. Got that to look forward to. Teresa Strasser also sitting in for Gina. First, I'll tell you about Stamps.com. We should all avoid crowds these days, especially at the post office. I've used Stamps.com for over 10 years here. We send out merch. We send out books. Send out paperwork, whether you're a small business sending invoices or an online seller shipping products or just working from your home. You need to mail stuff, and Stamps.com lets you buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, 24/7. And you can do it at home. 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off shipping rates. And now up to 62% off discount off UPS services. They got a special offer. It's a 4-week trial. Plus, you get free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitment. Just go to stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Adam. Stamps.com. Click on the microphone, top of the homepage. Type in Adam and get all the savings.
Announcing the Live From Out There Virtual Music Festival, exclusively on Live by Live. Featuring 4 solid weekends of live and tape performances from more than 45 artists. Now running every weekend through June 7th. See exclusive performances from Keller Williams, Turquoise, Mihaly, White Denim, Dispatch, Twiddle, and many more. Purchase a VIP tour pass for all weekends or individual show tickets to the Live From Out There Virtual Festival. Join us at livexlive.com/LFOT.
From Carolla One Studios and Teresa's house and Brian's house, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, security specialist and combatives instructor Ed Calderone. With Bald Brian on sound effects and Teresa Strasser filling in on news. And now, while other businesses are offering contactless delivery, as a comedian, he's just offering tactless delivery. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. We're going to mandate. Get it on. Welcome to the show. And welcome, Teresa Strasser, filling in for Gina Grad. Good day.
Adam, it's a great day because not only is it your B-Day, which you do not like to celebrate, but it is also your A-Day, which you do like to celebrate. That is, it's your Achievement Day. In my inbox today, because I have an Adam Carolla news alert, was news of you making history, 1.1 million video streams of one of your live shows out of Houston with your beloved John Hiatt, Graham Parker, and of course, former Navy SEAL and Congressman Dan Crenshaw. So happy Achievement Day to you.
Well, thank you. I'll take them both. Yeah. And Bald Brian.
How about you leave the joking to Adam?
I was sitting around thinking about my Achievement Day today, which you're not supposed to do on your birthday, but as I've instructed everyone to do, have an Achievement Day and think about that. And by the way, up your Achievement Day can move around. Your birthday can never move around. So you guys probably had an Achievement Day from 0 to 25, but the date of your Achievement Day may have moved.
It's true.
After 25, and hopefully
it should, and hopefully
it's going to move around a lot over the course of your lifetime. So think about that date and think about what that achievement date would be. And I don't know, Brian and Teresa, if you have given any thought to your Achievement Day. I mean, Brian, there's obviously a lot going on with your health, and how about a health update from you, Brian? We haven't had one in a while.
Let's postpone that for a week because I'm getting an MRI on Monday and a meeting with Dr. Rudnick on Wednesday, so I'll have a full picture at that point. So let's table that for a second. But it's funny because the first thing that came to my mind was like, wait, beat cancer, such and such. But that, I don't feel like I achieved that. I feel like it's a great day in my life, of course, but I don't feel like I achieved that. I was very fortunate and it happened to me. I would say maybe the reunion show, which I put together, or the day my book hit the bestseller list would probably those are the first two that come to mind for, you know, things I actually did and put effort into and, you know, saw the fruits thereof.
Teresa, what about you?
Well, I like to celebrate my achievement day on the day I won my first Emmy.
Jesus.
But then I
won. Surprise, it's not welded to your head.
I seriously considered putting it in the background of this Zoom to remind you guys that I'm not a complete dunce. Also, I'm with Brian with the health thing. Like, obviously, the day I bore my children, it was their birthday, but it felt like my achievement day, particularly with one, because one was just a C-section. That's an achievement of the doctor. But one, I pushed him out, and I feel like, why are we feting him on October 6th when I really did the heavy lifting?
That's true.
To be fair, my mom pushed me out as well, but I was 14 at the time. But I do feel like I was pushed out. Hey, Cousin Sal is on the blower, everybody. Hey, Cousin Sal.
Oh.
He's warming up his microphone over there. Can we hear you, Sal? I think you're still muted.
What's happening?
Hey, man, how are you?
Happy birthday. You're the birthday boy here. What's going on?
We were just, and Jimmy's on now. Right. I was just sort of thinking about the first time. I was thinking about that time we went to that pizza place or the Chinese food place in Manhattan and had that cheap Chinese dinner when Jimmy and I were trying to coax you into leaving your girlfriend and leaving New York and coming to L.A. in front of your girlfriend. Can we talk about that? Because that was like the first time I really met Sal. Well, I met him a couple days earlier, I think. Do you guys have recollections of that story?
I do.
Oh,
I'm used to making everyone around me uncomfortable. And then you guys really just turned it around on me before we even got the fortune cookies. Yeah, that was something else.
What? My recollection of it was a Chinese food place somewhere in Manhattan, cheap.
I think that's right.
Yeah, all the Chinese food places in Manhattan are pretty cheap. But hey, can you hear you guys hear me? Or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, yeah.
My headphones are I don't hear anything. And I guess I do hear anything. I guess the fact that you guys said yes and I heard it means I can hear you. So that's amazing. Adam, I thought this was going to be a surprise.
It was, but then Mike said, I said, why are we starting at 4 in the afternoon? Because we usually start at 1, and then he just said, screw it. So
yeah, because we popped up and you were just remarkably unexcited and surprised to see us. So something was wrong.
It's not that remarkable.
I have, you know, the bloom's off the rose. I've spent enough time with you guys, but I was thinking about that, sitting in that Chinese food joint with Sal, explaining that he needed to come back to L.A. with you, basically, Jimmy, and me. And it was in front of your then serious girlfriend who wanted no part of it.
As I recall, you and I, Adam, were making probably $80,000 a year combined. And we spoke as if we'd found gold in California. We needed Sal to come help pan it.
Where else can you make this kind of money?
And you know, we never really, I don't know why, it never occurred to me that his girlfriend, whose name was Melissa, which is his wife's name as well, might not be excited about the idea. I figured, oh well, of course she'd want to move out to California too, why not? And she was not excited at all about it, and she really didn't like me at all from pretty much that moment on.
And she was also not excited when we had karaoke on her, I think, one and only visit to California. And she whipped out a New York, New York. And Jimmy just pounded right afterwards with I Love L.A. Much, much louder and much more intense version, which brought her to tears.
She set me off when she pointed at you and said, we're leaving today. I was listen. You guys may have explored each other's bodies in college, but I've known you. I've known this guy since he was born.
Thank you.
I just remember sitting at that table thinking, I'm not related to him, and I just met her, and yet I feel like there's a lot of collateral damage coming my way. Like I and also I remember how much she voiced her opinion at that actual Chinese food place. Like, I was expecting her to play it a little closer to the vest. Then once you guys got back to the apartment and the door was closed, that's when she would open up about her true feelings about you moving out to California. Right. She did not. She spoke openly about it at the table, as I recall.
Yeah. MSG really set her off. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons I had to get rid of her.
Yeah. Well, and by get rid of her, Sal just decided to move and didn't tell her he was moving. And in fact, I believe it was our mutual cousin Sally who said to his girlfriend 8 days before he was set to leave the coast, and he was said, like, are you sad that Sal is leaving? And she said, what?
And that was it. And then when she approached me and said, why didn't you tell me? She was like freaking out. And I said, well, this is why. Look at you. Look how you're behaving right now. So she didn't get it.
Well, that was before they had invented the term ghosting and you disappeared.
That's right. Exactly. Way ahead of my time.
Jimmy, is there any timeline? By the way, I'm enjoying the show you're doing from your living room. And I do think there's some interesting stuff here. I don't mean like lemonades out of lemons. But like I sent you a note that when you did that whole Pence thing and you really put together that monologue, I said that's probably something you couldn't do in front of an audience. So do you feel like there's things like you're growing artistically and going places you kind of couldn't go if you're in front of that live studio audience with the warm up and the applause and the whole nine yards?
Yeah, it's different for sure. And there are definitely, it's not all drawbacks not being in front of an audience. And I'm trying to maximize the things that are good about it, the intimacy of it, being able to just kind of speak as opposed to perform. But, and I'm trying to write the things that are good down so I remember them when we do eventually go back into the studio and don't just forget them. But that's always the way, right? I mean, you learn, even like my friends who are in the restaurant business, they, you know, this is obviously a disaster on a lot of levels, but they're also like, oh, I just figured out this new menu item that's very popular and that, you know, yes, we can send our food out for takeout and it will be fine. And so you do always learn things when you didn't think you were going to, when you're trying to make the best of a situation, I think. And I think that's probably the case for us.
Is there a timeline? Is there any kind of timeline about going back to the studio?
Well, you know, there would be more pressure and more of a timeline if we weren't doing the show at all. But since we are doing the show every night, it's not a gap in ABC's lineup. And in fact, we're one of the few shows that is still on and producing new shows. So I think we'll play it pretty safe and go back when the coast is said to be clear.
Lock it in, Sal. What's the updates for Lock It In on Fox Sports?
Well, we're maybe supposed to go back at the end of the month, but we're waiting on these sports. It seems they're very good at releasing schedules, but not good at making deals with their players. So it's like, I could say our fantasy football draft is August 20th, and that's great. But these players, some of these deals, these unions are being offered are laughable. And there's a ways to go now, I think, between there. So, but hopefully beginning of July.
I wonder what you guys think about that, because I heard the NHL, they're going to just go right to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I'm all for that. I wonder if people will then look at the regular seasons and go, well, we don't need quite as much of this.
Well, it's funny. I was thinking that Adam must love it because his big thing is baseball's too long. It goes so many games. They're looking at an 80-game season and plus playoffs, Adam. You have to enjoy that.
You know who figured this out a long time ago? Pornography. Because we used to have a whole theme and the pool man was there and she'd serve him some iced tea and he'd wipe his brow and they'd exchange glances. You turn on You Porn now, they're halfway into it right from Jump Street. And the porn industry really has been showing us the way, which is all these games, it's all foreplay. Let's get to the money shot. That's the playoffs.
It's all play.
How we are kind of like from a metronome standpoint now, right? Like
we're just right in the postseason.
Right.
That's right.
And I'm kind of half kidding, but I'm not really kidding. Porn figured that one out.
I heard that these baseball games are going to start in the seventh inning.
That would be awesome.
Start stretching.
Right.
Dennis Ackersley throws out the first pitch.
Charles Barkley sings, "Take me out to the ball game." Oh, I wanted to ask you guys about this since we're talking about sports. And I watched The Last Dance. I guess you guys, we all enjoyed that, right? With Jordan.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Lance Armstrong, I just saw the first one. Now, I know everyone thinks Lance is kind of a douchebag, but he shared a lot of the same qualities Jordan had, right? Just wanted to win really badly and didn't really care what people thought of him.
Yeah, but he cheated. And Jordan didn't do that.
Right, but you watch the story. So how do you reconcile this? So you watch the story, and the story is, he's the number one cyclist in the world in 1996. And then the next year, he's kind of the middle of the pack. And then he realizes that all these guys are cheating. They're all juicing. They're all taking this substance. And they're all going to the front of the race. So now, what can he do? If he doesn't juice, then he's a perpetual middle of the packer. And then it creates a sort of, you know, a conundrum, which is, if you don't do this thing that's wrong, then no one's going to know your name. So what do you do if you can't get the other people to stop doing what they're doing?
Well, I think you have to speak out and get the other people to stop doing what they're doing. And I think those guys were reluctant to point fingers at each other because they were all guilty in some way. And you know, also Lance Armstrong lied so many times. Like,
yeah.
Why would we even believe this version of the story, that he did it as a reaction to someone else? I mean, we don't know that to be true. You know, I mean, at this point, the guy has it's interesting to go back and watch tapes of him lying in such a convincing way. It's I like watching that because I like to see what it looks like. And when you go back in retrospect and go, oh, this guy's not telling the truth. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted to believe it because I was like, fuck those Frenchies and America wins the Tour de France. But, you know, then you look back and you're like, they were all right.
Yeah, I feel like Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa only lied once. Maybe they were only approached once, but you're right. Like Lance Armstrong, he was given like five or six opportunities. I remember, are you sure? We used to do those sports editorials, Jimmy. And I think like every fourth day, it would be about Lance Armstrong lying.
Yeah, right.
He was one of a kind for sure.
And that's why God took one of his testicles from him.
I'm still going to watch the shit out of that series. And I don't know if it's just any port in a storm and ESPN's got nothing cooking, but I went right from The Last Dance right to Lance Armstrong. And I think I'm just going to keep going. I think we have a picture. Maxipat has a picture of us all in a booth, I guess with Kevin and Bean back in the day in Manhattan. I think, there's Jimmy, there's Sal wearing his Jerky Boys shirt. There's me.
The Daltz?
Kevin and Bean. Oh, maybe it is Daltz. Maybe we're in LA. Yeah, you're right. And
did Daltz have windows?
No. Maybe, yeah. No. I think it may have been the Talleyrand or something.
Yeah.
And Sal just grabbed this waitress and pulled her into the picture. She was not excited about being in the picture.
That's not my ex-girlfriend in a Chinese restaurant?
I'm sure her name was also Melissa.
It was, yeah.
Probably. One of a series of Melissas. Yeah, we were young then.
That's something.
Jimmy, you don't know when you're going to go back, but it's not really pressing because you are back, essentially, from your home. Sal, we'll figure out when the hell sports. I feel like the UFC may have got it right. Maybe the UFC, those were pretty exciting fights. You think you're going to miss the crowd more than you do? I don't know if I missed them that much.
Not for USC. It doesn't seem to matter for UFC. For pro wrestling, I know you're going to laugh, but it's kind of the same thing. Vince McMahon, Dana White don't have to deal with unions, but it's definitely a difference with pro wrestling. UFC, the backdrop's kind of dark anyway, and the one problem is the trainers now are and the announcers are figuring into the result. It seems weird, but did you see that whole thing where some of the fighters are listening to the advice given by Joe Rogan and others and adjusting accordingly? So they'll admit as much in the post-game interview. But
I can't wait for the NBA games without a crowd. I was actually interviewed Steph Curry about this, and I said, do you think we'll be able to hear what the players are saying to each other? And if we can hear that stuff, I don't want to hear the crowd. I would much rather hear what these guys are saying to each other than people cheering. I can't wait for that.
You know, it'd be funny if they told the guys that were calling the fights, Joe Rogan and others, if they told them, look, they're listening to too much of your advice, so you're going to have to mix it up a little. And they start hearing stuff like, he's got to stop dropping his right and blaming his parents. And see the guy's face change a little, like, hey, maybe I'm living in the past. You know what I mean? Like, mix it up. Get some emotional stuff in there.
Self-help stuff. Yeah.
That's great.
Adam, since it's your birthday, I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Please.
What do you remember as being the best birthday of your life?
Ooh.
Well, it's going to sound a little self-serving because you're on the show, but the surprise party you guys threw me when we went to Vegas one year, and we went to Vegas, and I think we drove home on a maybe it was a Saturday, I can't recall, but we drove to my house, and I'd never had a surprise party in my life. I've never really had any big birthday parties. When I was a kid, we could only afford half a pinata. So it was just the front legs, and all the candy would fall out before we even hung it from the tree. We were that poor. And
It was a peen.
We didn't do the yada. We didn't have that kind of cash, you know? I think Jimmy was me and you. I can't remember if Sal was there. I can't remember who else was there, but we drove. There was a third person there, and maybe it was some random kind of guy like Elliot or one of your Vegas friends or something. Yeah. There was somebody. We drove to my house and opened the door, and everybody was in there, and it was truly like a surprise party. I'd not experienced that before. And because we were coming home from Vegas, there was never an inkling like where you go like, oh, you know, I'm going to take you out to Color Me Mine and make a bunch of phone calls while you're on the potter's wheel. Like, I didn't get suspicious. You know what I mean? I was just coming home from Vegas, and it was like 7 at night. We're like, all right, now we're home from Vegas. And that worked. Yeah.
That's good.
What I have to say isn't as uplifting as Jimmy's question, but I wrote down a bunch of names of people who died at age 56.
Right. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, you want to hear it?
I do. And if you don't, if you want to get depressed, watch The Love Boat, because you'll go, I'm older now than Captain Steubing was in 1981 when he was running that vessel. Like, I'm physically older than he was. All those people you thought were old, you're now older than
them. Adam, you are older than Ray Charles was in the We Are the World video.
That's insanity.
Yeah, I know. That's when it really comes home. Right.
All right, here's a few. Abraham Lincoln, pretty good. This is who you have to beat. Steve Jobs, Beethoven, Rick James, Warren Zevon, John Hancock, which is funny because you could barely sign your name, and Adolf Hitler.
Really?
56 years old. So there you go.
Some real notables in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could do this.
That is uplifting. And
yeah, there you go.
And last question. So, yeah, that's actually a good question. I'll say that surprise party. Sal, you must have been at that surprise party.
I don't know if I was
in L.A. yet.
Trying to think. You had a couple good ones at the party house on the Blue Top. I'm trying to think.
Well, how about your 30th when Roddy Rowdy showed up?
That was beautiful. That was like a kid's party right in your backyard. What I heard him coming around the corner. He had the kilt and everything, right? You guys flew from Oregon. And he stayed for like 7 minutes and then left. And I was so glad he left. I was so uncomfortable.
That's how I feel too. Whenever there's somebody that I'm very excited about, yeah. especially somebody as a kid, I was thinking about recently is Adrian Barbeau, who, I think we surprised Adam with Adrian Barbeau on Valentine's Day one year sure. on the show.
On your
right,
show, Adam? Yeah. Oh, yeah. On your show.
Yeah.
No, you know that it's a weird thing. And I'd be interested to get both of your takes on this feeling. So Rowdy Roddy, I remember stretch limo pulled up. He gets out of the stretch limo. Jimmy had ordered, it wasn't Chick-fil-A, it was like Cluck a Chicken or something from Phoenix to be
from Vegas. Farm Basket
to be brought. Same great taste without all the religious baggage, basically, is what it says on the sign. So he brought that in. And so Rowdy Roddy came in and he was all in full gear and everything. But that feeling Sal was describing, which is like, this is great, but also it's uncomfortable. I don't want to fuck this up. And it's that same feeling. If you guys remember when you were young and you'd ask a girl out on a date or to the prom or to some event, you'd go up, you'd ask her if she said yes. You couldn't get out of there fast enough, right? Like, if I just hang out, she's going to change her mind. We've got it.
You're like Billy Bean in Moneyball. You got the yes, and you hung the phone up immediately.
Yeah. Right. We're going to the prom. See you later. You just, like, turn around and leave. I'm going to go boutonniere shopping.
I did that one time in sixth grade. A girl named Lynn Engelstad, the only girl I ever asked to a dance, and she said yes, and I was just thrilled beyond belief. And then I got the hell out of there. And when it came time to go to the dance, I dodged her the whole time.
Now, did she know you as the great Jimmy Kimmel back then or Joe Briefcase?
The Briefcase Joe, not Joe. By the way, this is pre-Briefcase Joe. Sixth grade was like the peak for me as socially, really. And only because I got one girl to say yes to going to the dance. I never danced.
How did you earn the title Briefcase Joe?
Briefcase Joe was my first day of junior high school. Seventh grade, before I went to school that morning, my mom said, hey, you know, Dad got a new briefcase and, you know, maybe you want to use his old briefcase. And he had this vinyl fake leather briefcase that I wish I still had. And I thought, oh, yeah, that, you know, when you get something of your dad's, like your dad gives you his old wallet or something like that. You know, Adam, you probably haven't experienced that. But sometimes dads have things and then they pass them on to their children. So I get this briefcase.
Well,
and
bad jeans in my dad's particular case. the ultimate gift. But go ahead.
You got half a pinata.
I put all my stuff in this briefcase and I go to school. And of course, I'm nervous. It's my first day of junior high school, and I'm already a year younger than everyone else in the seventh grade. And I walk into the cafeteria holding my briefcase, and some big kid yells, "Hey, Briefcase Joe!" And a chill just went over my body. And my first thought was, I was just mad at my mother for not anticipating that this would happen to me and for sending me to school with the worst fucking thing you could possibly send anybody to school with, a briefcase. I imagine being called Briefcase Joe for the entirety of my life after that. Luckily, that was the end of it, but I was so embarrassed. I almost threw it in the garbage before I went home.
Well, regardless of you trying
Joe
to...
Joe Exotic has a similar story.
Yeah. However you may try to poison me on Joan, your mom, it shall never take, because I am in love with that woman.
I know you guys.
We love each other.
Yes. It's weird. My parents have the same like kind of infatuation with you that they have with me, but you didn't have the first like 25 years of life with them. You didn't have that time to, where, you know, it makes you uncomfortable when your mother like kind of stares at you and just goes, says, oh, my son, you can actually enjoy it. Whereas, you know, it curdles my blood.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way about it's like when the guy's a gangbanger and he's shivving people and he's causing trouble. And then he goes to jail for 26 years, and then he comes out, he's everyone's cool uncle at that point, you know? And I feel the same way about your parents. I missed all the briefcase baggage, pardon the pun, of the early part of the years, and now I'm just left with the lovable Joan and Jim. They have sort of worked as sort of a surrogate for my family as well, because I do feel like your mom is sort of the mom I never had, and your dad's kind of the dad I never had. So,
and in a way, I have to say also your parents have been like to me the way they were to you, and that they pay literally no attention to me whatsoever.
Well, to be fair to them, you crossed the line and became successful. And,
and you only have yourself to blame.
Yes. And my mom sort of did, you know, famously with you, what she did with Jon Stewart all those years ago when she announced he was very funny. And then I announced he was a friend of mine. And then she announced he was hit and miss. And then we never spoke of him again. You, my friend, hosted the Oscars not once, but two times just to rub it in her face. And they used to enjoy the Oscars. And
nice well, if going. There's anything else they like, let me know and I'll get involved with it so I can leave them with nothing.
It's a good point. All right. I'll give you guys a plug. Not that you need it. Jimmy Kimmel Live weeknights, of course, 11:35 ABC. And you can subscribe to the YouTube channels where, well, Jimmy Kimmel Live, and Twitter and Instagram at Jimmy Kimmel. And then, of course, Cousin Sal, Lock It In, will be back when they're good and goddamn ready. His Twitter and Instagram at the Cousin Sal as well. And I can't wait for this whole thing to be in the podcast. Sorry. Against All Odds with Cousin Sal. Enjoy that every Thursday on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I can't wait for this whole thing to get over and then all of us to grab a beer and watch some damn football. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
All Thanks, right, Adam. Happy birthday, man.
Appreciate
Happy
it.
Happy birthday.
Thank
Bye,
you.
Guys.
Love you.
Hey, guys. Bye.
Love you, too. Yeah. Take care.
All right. That was sweet. Let's
wow.
see.
Wow. I'm touched, Adam, by that heartfelt love you.
What a surprise.
Yeah, sort of.
Because you've been emotionally distant way before being socially distant, but that was really authentic and heartfelt.
Yeah, you'd be, Teresa, you would, I was sort of thinking at the beginning of this whole thing when they were talking about staying 6 foot apart. And Fauci would give those, he'd go, you got to stay 6 foot, no touching, no handshaking, put a mask on. I kept praying he would go, and no eye contact.
And do.
I mean, Adam, remember that time I started being your news girl and you didn't look me in the eye for 6 months?
I was listening to Fauci.
6 months? He fast-tracked you.
Do you also remember a time, it was hilarious, but I think it was partially serious, when I announced I was pregnant live on the air and you asked your assistant Jay to hug me for you.
You outsourced your hugs.
You outsourced it.
I was on the vanguard of this whole social distancing. Yeah, I look at me good. Don't look at me as cold hearted. Look at me as a pioneer.
I do.
All right. Let's see. Well, good. We have some news. Oh, we have, I have a little clip from my audiobook to play as well, which is coming out on the 16th. But you guys can pre-order it, and that would be a nice birthday present for me if you pre-ordered my book, because they tell me it's important. They tell me that if you pre-order it, it just helps get you into more outlets and so on and so forth. Dawson, you have I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. What segment is it? This is
This is from it's chapter 3. I forget the name of the chapter, but this is the nice little bit you put together on why Lynette loves those Dateline shows.
Here we go. Dateline and all those Friday night true crime shows. These are heroin to Lynette. Whether it's about a mother killing her kids, like with the whole Casey Anthony trial, which Lynette didn't miss a second of, or making a murderer. The Netflix documentary about the random photographer for the Auto Trader who got murdered when she showed up to take pictures. Lynette's all in. My wife could be an FBI profiler based on the amount of true crime she studied. She definitely watches Dateline because their fear-mongering tagline is, "Don't watch alone." And she definitely tries not to watch alone. Now, she tries to get me in on it. My thought is, yeah, there's some really horrible people out there. I'm depressed enough with my life. I don't need to peek into someone else's tragedy. These shows are loved by all women and their cuckolded husbands. They're catnip for the pussy whipped. I don't know and wouldn't want to know a guy who's into this shit. Henry Rollins is not watching Dateline. It's just not practical enough. These murders are solved. It's not like if you can crack the case halfway through, you can call in and win a prize. Chicks don't understand statistics. They watch this shit and think, well, there's a 50-50 chance that'll be me. It plays into the victim mentality. Something could happen to you or your family. It's always inter-family. It's never a Crip shot of blood. The end. When a ferry overturns in the Indian Ocean, we don't even notice it because we're not going to be on any Bengali boats anytime soon. But we're all going to let our kids walk to the park. It has to tickle that could be me part of women. It has to pull the fear lever for them. In a quiet neighborhood. Wait, I'm in a quiet neighborhood. It could happen anywhere. Oh shit, we just bought a house anywhere. We're days away from a promo that says, on a special 48 hours, look behind you. And that's coming out on the 16th. So pre-order that bad boy now. I'm going to hit True Nijin and we'll take a break. We'll do some news with our favorite Teresa Strasser. First, True Nijin. You've heard about the trend of NAD boosters. There's only one backed by both clinical research and regulatory approvals as well. True Nijin, from age 40 to 60, humans experience a near 50% decline in NAD, leaving the mitochondria, there we go, to compete for a shrinking supply of their most valuable energetic resource. So I take this stuff. I was talking to Shannon Sharp the other week. He takes this stuff. A lot of athletes and celebrities take this True Nijin quietly. So you got a lot of stress on your immune system, lack of exercise. Overeating can also deplete NAD because cells have to expand and use more energy to function. Support cellular defense and repair with True Nijin. Visit TRUNIAGEN.com. Use the code ADAM. Get 20% off any 3 month plus supply now. But it's closing out fast, May 31st. So get going on this now with True Nijin. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come right back and do the news with Teresa Strasser right after this.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hi, I'm a 37-year-old semi-educated white male, and I pre-purchased the Audible version of Emotional Support Animal for two reasons. Number one, working in an aerospace machine shop, being able to hear ACE in one ear and pneumatic tooling in the other helps me to work better. And number two, I think ACE is a better reader than I am. Thanks. Get it on. Woo.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Well, you better hope that last statement wasn't true, sir, because that would put you at a real deficit for this thing called life. All right. Ed Calderon, our security all things Mexico expert, is going to join us a little later on. But first, Teresa Strasser and her news.
From the New York Post, Christian Cooper, the black man who filmed a white woman calling the cops on him in Central Park, said he feels uncomfortable with the amount of backlash that she's received, including losing her job. You've probably all seen the incident on video. Cooper asks the woman, also named Cooper, her name's Amy Cooper, they're obviously not related, to leash her dog in an area.
Why is it so obvious, Teresa?
I'm sorry. He asked her to leash her dog in an area that it was required, but she refused. When he filmed the encounter, the woman, now known as Central Park Karen on social media, calls the police and falsely accuses him of threatening her life. Now, Christian Cooper is asking people to stop threatening the woman who called the cops. Quoting Christian Cooper here now, "It's a little bit of a frenzy and I am uncomfortable with that," he said to the New York Times. "If our goal is to change the underlying factors, I am not sure that this young woman having her life completely torn apart serves that goal. In an appearance on CNN, he said he considers the woman's actions racist, but he urged people who were outraged by it to stay civil.
Well, that's nice. A little voice of reason. I like that. That's refreshing.
The man is obsessed with birds. He's a member of the Audubon Society, and he was just out there trying to watch the birds. In any interview I've seen with him, he does come across very reasonable.
What? Articulate, Teresa?
Articulate.
Clean. Articulate. Yeah. What else? Did she issued a pretty heartfelt apology as well, right?
Yes. All and right. He mentioned that he did acknowledge receiving her apology.
Well, we can probably turn the page is what I'm saying. There's enough out there for us to be concerned with. Now,
I agree. This woman acted horribly, but her life is being disproportionately ruined, I would say. Like she acted like a real bitch, but like, let's fucking calm down, everyone. She didn't kill anybody.
I agree. And I didn't know, I'm not sure how the bird watching factors in, but I don't know what her dog was up to. But
okay, her dog. Do you know that she had to give her dog back?
Yes. I heard. But I'm also saying nobody's taking her side. But in this particular case, if somebody lets their dog off the leash, unless their dog is doing something to you, you can also sort of look the other way with that as well. I've been to many places where dogs should. I guess at dog parks, a lot of the time dogs are supposed to be on the leash. But I would never tell anyone to put the dog on the leash. But I don't know what the dog was up to. The dog could have been chasing the birds away or dry humping his leg. But
yes, I think the former. And I think that's why it's germane to the story, because this is a specific area for bird watchers. And the dog was probably scaring away the birds.
I guess. How does that work? Are they on the ground? Are they in the trees? Like, how does I walk my dog all over the place. I literally had a crow attempt to shit on my dog yesterday because it sat up in the tree and it just started making those crow noises like rah, rah, and we were just both looking at it rah, and as we got a little closer to it, it dropped the bomb right on us. But either way, all right, this is nothing. She's been punished. He's being gracious about it, which is nice. I like that.
Do you feel that the name Karen is going to go away? Because there aren't any more Adolfs, and I'm not comparing the two. But now,
as a result of the cultural phenomenon.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it was a popular name when I was in high school and then junior high. There's plenty of Karens in my junior high and high school class. I don't know that there are any in my daughter's classes, but...
There's no Karens in my kids' classes either, so maybe that's why it's called a Karen, because a Karen is of a certain age, whereas a Harper or a Charlotte is going to be younger.
That's right, an Emma.
Sophia.
Emma. Exactly.
And let me flip this theory to you guys. This wasn't so much racist. I mean, it's a little bit, but like, she wouldn't have acted any different if it was a white guy. She would have done the same thing. I think the Karenism of our society, as we see it here manifested, is these fucking women, like Adam, like you alluded to yesterday, in a zero gravity environment. She hasn't been told what to do in many years, and now there's someone telling her to leash her dog. She lost her fucking mind. I think it's a lot less racism and a lot more like, how dare you tell me what to do?
Yeah, there used to be a kind of humbling gravity that all kind of kept everyone sort of in their lane. It's sort of like when you were 9 and anybody's parent could tell you anything, including discipline you, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it was just a sort of, you lived under this constant gravity of, just think about the relationship a young person has with law enforcement now versus the relationship you had with a cop when you were 14 or whatever. A cop looked your way. Yes, sir. No, sir. Whatever it is they told you to do, you just do it, you know, or a parent or an authority or a principal at school or whatever it is. And in general, there's just kind of a lifting of the authority. And so if you're on a plane and the flight attendant tells you to, you know, put your tray table up, half the time people go fuck off. Like they just lost their relationship with authority. It's mm-hmm. kind of like I always say, I talked to Drew about this recently, but I've said it a lot. Money became invisible. And when money became invisible, we kind of lost our relationship with it. It's sort of like, keep California shut down till the end of the year, print up some money and drop it off. You know what I mean? Like make some new money. Right. Like it's a kind of we're all guilty of it with credit cards and online banking. Yes.
Why do you think Vegas uses chips?
Right.
You don't think about the money you're throwing out. If you're throwing out $20 bills, you'd feel a lot different than if you were putting out little discs.
So we've kind of lost our relationship with money, and we've kind of lost our relationship with authority as well. And if you go to my house, you'll realize nobody who lives in it has any relationship with authority or money. So I just come walking in. I'm not the authority or the person who makes the money. I'm just some dude who lives in the house who's trying to tell them shit to do that they don't want to do.
Well, there is an industry where cash is very much still in play, and that is prostitution.
Mm.
You may have been wondering how sex workers have fared during the coronavirus. Jimmy Kimmel.
I was just thinking about that. Yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel earlier mentioned that restaurant workers are struggling. Of course, the hospitality industry is struggling. Well, sex workers are also struggling. This from the New York Post. Enterprising Swiss sex workers have devised some inventive ways for their colleagues to service clients without spreading the coronavirus by using certain positions that they feel are safer, and those are doggy style and reverse cowgirl. Sex workers drafted new guidelines in the hopes that Switzerland will lift the temporary ban on prostitution enacted 2 months ago over COVID-19 concerned both of the aforementioned sexual positions, that's reverse cowgirl and doggy style, allow for a safer distance between faces, according to sex worker advocacy group Procay Ray in Switzerland. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, where prostitution, by the way, is legal. They claim these prostitutions can reduce the likelihood of contracting or transmitting the virus via water droplets that are inherent in missionary style intercourse. Now, I should say there is no evidence that these positions can mitigate the risk of contracting COVID-19, which can travel as far as 13 feet.
Well, scientifically dubious.
It's a windfall, obviously, for the guys. First off, we need... Now more than ever, we got to bring back the glory hole. And the glory hole,
time has come.
Which was normally plywood, 3/4-inch plywood, now needs to be replaced with 1/8-inch thick plexi or Lexan. Thus, first thing, there's a benefit here. Everybody's going to pick up 5/8 of an inch on their dick because as you formerly, like when my granddad... And his father before him would use the glory hole. That was 1 inch thick. You know, that's a piece of hefty material there. Obviously, you're going to burn the first inch of your dick just getting it through the hole. Plexi and Lexan, that runs about 1/8 thick. So just getting rid of the 3/4 ply, replacing it with the 1/4-inch or 1/8-inch Lexan is going to buy you 5/8 of an inch of much needed dick length. Okay, people?
Genius.
That's number one. Number two, it's right in the sneeze guard. I mean, a sneeze guard is literally made out of that material. Also, one of my problems with the former glory holes, it was so impersonal. No eye contact. I had no idea what color the gal's hair was.
I think that was the allure. Where it was the anonymity.
Perhaps for some. but not for this savvy buyer. I wanted to see what side she parted her hair on. And now with the Lexan, not only do I pick up 5/8 of an inch of, again, sorely needed length. Obviously, there's nothing we can do about the girth. Sorely needed length, but also the kind gaze of of the worker on the other side of the glass. And
speaking of gaze, perhaps you want to go for a frosted plexiglass just to keep the allure. You know, it could be anyone over there.
You're right. Good call.
So you're basically proposing a genital sneeze guard.
What I'm saying, look, and obviously we can't all go to the whorehouse. At some point, the mountain's going to have to come to Muhammad. And that's why what I do is I have the shield that the riot police use.
Right.
Savvy.
Obviously, we take the insignia off it because emotionally that can slow things down for the gal sometimes. And we just, I just travel with that. I set it down.
Did you see SWAT in her face?
Now, Adam, I have a practical question. Could you repurpose the acrylic in like the stripper shoes?
Once we get enough mileage out of them, we will melt them down and make them into acrylic stripper shoes. But for now, this is the safest way I know to visit a sex worker.
It's sort of a version of the Recyclarola.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
If you will, right? Because it's a hole.
Much smaller.
The hole's a lot smaller.
I've seen the one in your home, and it's just a hole in your wall.
Right.
You throw the recyclables through.
Is it? But it's that if all I was recycling was Mentos, it would be perfect. But not bottles and cans. But yes, I get your point.
Okay, speaking of comparing length, you're going to think that I'm making this up or that this is a wives' tale, but there is a study showing that men with longer ring fingers may have a lower chance of dying from the coronavirus and could be more likely to face mild symptoms. This is according to a new study published in the journal Early Human Development. The reason, the length of ring fingers is believed to be linked to how much testosterone men are exposed to in utero. So the longer the finger, the greater the hormonal exposure, and testosterone is believed to protect against severe coronavirus-related illness. So you'd be just as likely to contract the illness, but you wouldn't get as sick if you had been exposed to more testosterone in utero, which you can tell if you have a... So do you guys have a long ring finger?
You see that, ladies and sick people? Longer than the next finger.
Oh, yeah. I don't... Let's see. My index and my ring appear to be the same. There's the middle, the ring, the middle, and the index, right?
Yep,
I think my index and my ring, they seem to be the same length. Or the ring finger's a millimeter shorter, about the same length. This is how I would describe it.
Trace, now, is this turn you on,
Brian. Remember that if your hand is bigger than your face, in fact retarded. So go ahead.
Okay. I'll be sure to take that test later.
Well, no, you got to kind of just like the audience kind of wants. Oh,
damn it! Oh, son of a bitch.
So, but it's interesting that men are dying at a higher rate than women. So how is that testosterone benefiting us?
You are asking the same question that scientists are also asking.
Is it because older men have lower testosterone? It's obviously killing older men, older people, you know what I'm saying, at a higher rate?
I don't know.
Just a guess.
This is a question for scientists everywhere who really know very little about this. One day it lives on a surface, one day it doesn't. One day it travels 6 feet, then it travels 13 feet. So I think every day we learn a little bit more and every clue gets us closer. So this will be interesting. The testosterone has to do with receptors in the lungs. It's pretty complicated, but hopefully they'll get some clues from this that'll help them get more and more information to help treat people who do get it and do get severe symptoms. Now, do you guys, are you open to hearing some Christian rock?
Yes.
Okay. I think they're going to fire up a song for me. Here goes.
Already all sounds right. That like it sounds like an Imagine Dragons song or whatever. Go ahead.
Okay. So we turn that down a little bit. Thank you. Okay. So you are hearing Jonathan Steingard. He's the lead singer for Hawk Nelson. which is a Christian rock band.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you can turn that off. You get the idea. Mm-hmm. Thank
Sounds
you.
Like most, like a lot of pop rock these days.
Yeah.
Well, he had a really successful career in this Christian rock band, and then something happened. He decided that he no longer believed in God.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a come to Jesus, a literal come to Jesus, and he had to renounce his faith last Wednesday in a lengthy Instagram post. He said he had been terrified to post this for a while, but it felt like the right time for him to be honest. He grew up in a Christian home. He was a pastor's kid, playing and singing in a Christian band and having the word Christian in front of most of the things in his life. He wrote, "I am now finding that I no longer believe in God."
I'm going to talk to my son when I get home, and I'm going to explain to him, you should make it your entire life without ever renouncing anything or writing open letters. I will die happy.
It's never.
Never. I can make my entire life, I will not renounce anything, and I'm no open letters.
But people are frequently renouncing things in open letters.
Oh, I will do a lot of denouncing, and I will write a lot of closed letters. Yes.
Hold on, Adam. You've renounced the Zanku chicken that wouldn't give you a combo plate, and you renounced the insurance agent who wouldn't come out to do your cars. You've done a lot of renouncing.
I renounced the Zanku chicken in Van Nuys, but then I drove to the the Hollywood Zanku chicken and got my 50-50 shawarma plate. So it was a regional renunciation, but it was not a global renunciation. And I'll explain the nuanced differences to my children as part of my renunciation speech.
In an open letter to your children.
That's right.
Toward the end.
Is there anything blowhardier than the open letter to your kids or just writing the letter to your kids?
I don't care for that at all. There's a lot of that and I don't care for it. Mm. It's always an open letter to my daughter and it's about not having body shame.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah,
can't
I don't
you
like
just
it.
Tell her? Yeah. I don't like that.
She's right up the hall. She's one of the few people you can she's one of the few people you can speak to in person without putting shoes on.
Publishing this open letter is way more effort than talking to her.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Toward the end of his Instagram open letter, he said, "I'm open to the idea that God is there. I'd prefer it if he was. I suspect if he is there, he is very different than what I thought." And I want to say that following his post, the singer received an outpouring of support from other Christian artists, including 10th Avenue North singer Mike Donahue, who wrote, "Man, I love that you shared this. You know, I'm always around to talk about our belief in God or lack thereof. Love you and always will." So maybe he just needs to be introduced to the concept of the great magnet.
Well, I know there's like devil kind of worship rock and there's Christian rock. Is there agnostic rock? Would that be like U2? Would that be like Boz Scaggs? Like, is there a middle ground?
Oasis was pretty agnostic in the day, if I recall correctly. They would count.
Okay, because I feel like it's feast or famine. It's either Christian or, you know, Ozzy Osbourne's biting the head off a bat. You know, for me, I like a little agnostic rock. That should be a Sirius XM channel.
The Beatles, after they're bigger than Jesus?
Right.
I think you need to write an open letter demanding agnostic rock.
That's a good point. All right, let's do one more.
Okay. Alaska has now unbanned some books after outrage from the community. The school board there fell under national and international spotlight after saying in so many words, "F. Scott Fitzgerald." Mm. We don't want the great they didn't want the Great Gatsby. They didn't want Catch 22. And they felt no need for any of the children to find out why the caged bird sings. The books were deemed controversial because of concepts including sexual references, rape, racial slurs, and seeds of violence and profanity. In a board meeting earlier this month, dozens testified against the decision. And during the board's latest meeting, at least 80 cars showed up outside the district's building to protest. Nearly 600 tuned into the meeting's live stream, and the book ban was overturned.
You know, it's a weird time we're living in, but when I was growing up, if somebody wanted to ban something, it was sort of like, Well, they were religious fundamentalists, and they didn't like right. these overtones or the sexuality or the gay overtones right. or something like that. That still exists. Now we have a whole group of atheists on the left that don't like what Tom Sawyer called his buddy he met on the river. And now there's these two groups, both don't agree on anything, but they do agree on censorship. And that's a little bit scary for all of us in the middle, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Don't you feel? Yeah. I feel like people can read things and hear things and make up their own minds and decisions. I don't think it needs to be censored.
Let me share this with you guys. Sorry to interrupt you, Brian. I wanted to feel like I was doing something productive during the pandemic. So I read my kids To Kill a Mockingbird one chapter a day. I read it to them aloud. And I don't know if you've read that in a while or ever.
It's been a while for Adam.
Yeah. Forever for Adam.
Adam's been banning books for decades.
Right.
To Kill a Mockingbird, which won a Pulitzer, is essentially about a rape and a trial surrounding that rape. Of a white woman accusing a black man. And there are so many N-words used in this story because it took place, in, I think, in 1932, and that was the vernacular. But when you were reading it to kids, you sort of do have to trust that they can understand the context of the story.
Well, you know, we all grew up. Look, I watched Roots, you know, the 8-part series when I was a kid. We watched it straight through. There was an utter context for it. You know, we understood what it was. It wasn't like this imagery is not suitable. I understood what it was. I understood what the words they use and how it's unacceptable today. That's part of the maturation. Part of becoming adult is being exposed to those kinds of things and having to kind of wrestle with them a little bit and to sort of work them out in your head. You know what I mean? The idea of avoiding all that is fine if you're going to perpetually be 9. But I mean, if you're going to move into maturity, you're going to have to start being exposed to some of those ideas. And then hopefully you have a group around you, like parents, who can put things into context and explain things. And that's, we kind of understood that in the past. The, you know, wrap everyone in bubble wrap, dip them in Purell and keep them away from those ideas. Fine if they're never going to leave the house, but at some point you're going to have to hear a bunch of ideas and then you're going to have to decide which ones work and which ones don't. And also, I don't think hearing ideas or seeing imagery or hearing words, good or bad, they don't make you think it's okay. You know, I mean, I don't think kids are that malleable. I think you see these images and you hear these words and you go, well, let's not make that mistake again. That's how most people think. So we don't give ourselves enough credit. We really
Ryan, what
don't.
Were you saying before I cut you off so rudely?
I forget. I was saying something along the lines of like, these aren't the anarchist cookbook or Mein Kampf. You know what I mean? These are books that these are literary works. Granted, they're controversial at the time. Right? There's some ideas that may need some explaining, but let's not get carried away.
And also it gives you some context for like where we were and where we are now and how much we've progressed and how, you know, being gay was a big deal and a serious issue and horrible things were done to people. Now we've evolved to this place where it's not that, even though daddy still thinks it's yucky. most of us have evolved is what I would say to my kids. And by the way, we should take some pride in that evolution. We should go, this is how we used to treat black people. This is how we used to treat gay people. Now we've evolved. And why that wouldn't be a good message, I don't know. All right, Teresa, let's bring it home, baby girl.
Thank you so much for letting me sit in for the great Gina Grad. I'm Teresa Strasser, and that was the news.
Teresa Strasser and the news. Fuck you, CNN.
All right, let me hit Geico here. Everyone is sharing these days, sharing your dance moves and your DIY haircut fails and your inner lip sync star. Now, Geico's going to do a little sharing. They're going to give back 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because Geico's committed for the long haul. So the 15% credit lasts the full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. That's geico.com/giveback. Okay, I'm going to do a one-on-one with Ed Calderon, the man who knows all things Mexico because he was born there and he's done security there, and he'll tell us all about what the cartels and everyone else is up to. I'm going to bid adieu to Bald Brian and Teresa Strasser, and we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Ed Calderon right after this.